Got you up here. David Lee from the University of Miami will be updating us on what they're doing down at Bascom Palmer at the University of Miami. Dr. Lee.
Hi, everyone. Good morning. I'm a
crowd.
Yes, I got my fan club here with me this morning. They actually got up.
That speaks volumes.
Yeah. I'm a chronic disease epidemiologist, and we have a multidisciplinary team of ophthalmologists, biostatisticians, and health economists, and health services researchers that are working down in Miami on this project. So, no financial relationships to disclose. So our aim is to evaluate how individual and sociophysical contextual factors impact access to and the quality of eye care services among medically underserved in Miami-Dade County area. And we're particularly interested in not only African Americans, but also Haitian Americans, which we have a large population of Cuban Americans and Central and South Americans. So I'm going to talk a little bit today about our two individual projects, one which we have some data to share with you today, and the other which is just now we're in the ramp-up phase of data collection for the second one. The first one is a chart review, and we're using a similar data collection methodology as the Will's Eye Study team to look at our medical and billing records to evaluate factors that are related to the quality of vision care in patients with diabetes. And we're particularly interested in the whether or not they're compliant with annual fundus photo screening or not. Originally, our original design, we proposed to look at 500 charts. These are patients 40 years of age and older, excluding those that are being seen for other ocular procedures at Bascom Palmer. Initially, we thought we were going to have to select records at random to ensure that we had a minority oversample in those 500 records. So what we did was we decided to start with the records from 2005 to 2008 so that we could determine at least two annual follow-up periods during that time frame. So we used our computerized billing records. Many institutions have had computerized billing records for a long time, but not computerized medical records, showing where the priorities lie in terms of it's important to get your money for services. So we used that, and we used the ICD-9 codes that were also part of the billing records to do our initial selection. And then once we selected a case, then we would request the paper medical record from the archive. So initially we started out with all folks who had an ICD-9 code indicating they had diabetes or early retinopathy. We first eliminated that yielded about 12,000 records. We eliminated non-Miami-Dade County addresses, which took us down to about 7,800. We then further eliminated anyone that had been seen prior to 2004 for other conditions, and that resulted in about 2,100 records. We decided in a phase one of our study to focus only on those individuals that did not have any evidence of retinopathy, so that led to a sample of about 1,000. And then when we started pulling records, we realized that we had a problem because we thought we were going to get only those individuals who had never been seen prior to 2004 for any reason, but we saw plenty of evidence of that. So we were in a transitory phase, apparently, and there was still some sort of hand work that was being done to get people into the clinic. So we decided to focus on 2007, 2008 only, and that yielded a sample size of 308. And so far, we've abstracted data from 57 charts, and those are nice and clean. We're getting now only those individuals who had not been seen prior to 2004. So what have we found so far? So the primary outcome here is whether or not folks are returning annually for fundus photo examination. So everyone in our sample has diabetes. And what we found is that a near majority of the cases never returned. They just went to Bascom-Palmer once, and there was no evidence that they came back. Less than 10% of this small sample had perfect compliance. In other words, they had returned at least every 15 months. We gave a little bit of wiggle room in terms of that 12-month follow-up period. And about 25% of the cases were compliant for one or more intervals, but not for all two or three intervals that they could have, should have potentially come back for. And we also subsetted out those that were compliant except for the last interview, because those people may come back sometime after our cutoff. So we found that the folks that had perfect compliance were more likely to have been living longer with diabetes, and they were somewhat younger, so we're probably capturing more of our type 1 diabetics in that small percentage of folks that had perfect compliance. The gender distribution varied a little bit. It was generally had a higher proportion of females that never returned, but a higher proportion of males that had perfect compliance, which was we thought was interesting, kind of counterintuitive.
Totally counterintuitive.
Yeah. Well, again, it's only 57, so we got to collect some more cases. This is an interesting finding. We looked at race ethnicity distributions, and we have a large percentage of folks who did not have the race or ethnicity identified in the medical record, and it's not randomly distributed. As you can see here, almost the majority of those that had never returned, we did not have any race or ethnic information. So right there, that's sort of capturing perhaps some sort of behavioral dynamic that suggests that those individuals that didn't return really were different in some respects, but we don't know what the distribution is in terms of their race and their ethnicity. So we have a potential workaround for this, which I'll talk about in a minute. This is a percentage by whether or not they had private insurance, and not surprisingly, those that had perfect compliance were more likely to report that or more likely to have private insurance, and less than 40% of those that never returned had private insurance. So we're, in addition to continuing to abstract these 308 records, we've been working so far unsuccessfully with our IRB to obtain permission to abstract Social Security numbers, because one of the things we want to do is eliminate from our denominator anyone who has actually died in our survey period. They shouldn't be counted as being non-compliant if they're dead. So. But we've actually been denied this by our IRB, so we are in the process of filing a protest to see if we can't get that information. We're also thinking maybe after we complete our chart review, we actually go back and obtain permission to contact those who were non-compliant so we could collect more detailed information on the reasons why they weren't going back for annual follow-up. And we're also going back to this issue of incomplete information on race and ethnicity. We are going back to our IRB to seek permission to augment our data using area-based measures, because we have the addresses of these folks when they came in to Bascom-Palmer. And we want to geocode those addresses, and then having done that, we can gather information from the U.S. Census about the proportion of the race and ethnic breakdown of the neighborhood from which these people are coming from, what the poverty status is. We can even calculate how challenging it is to get from their home to Bascom-Palmer for that screening. We can actually do this both in terms of the amount of transit time it takes to drive there and also how difficult it is to get there using public transportation. So these are factors that we think might be related to compliance. So we haven't gone to IRB with that. We're going to fight the Social Security battle first and then try to get that. Yes, try to get that done, and then we're going to go back to them with this one. So given what we our experience with the Social Security, it's going to be interesting. So our second project is an ancillary study of the community health Hispanic community health study. This is the largest study of Hispanics in the United States. We just finished data collection at four sites, total sample size of 16,000. And this was not originally, we had not originally proposed to do this when we submitted our application, but when we all got together, I realized that we weren't doing a lot of work in Hispanic populations at the other three centers. There's some work going on. So we switched gears and decided that this would be an important thing to bring to the collective here. So what we want to do is study 2,000 of these individuals that have already participated in this Hispanic community health study in Miami. And just a little background on the Hispanic community health study. This is really designed to look at the health status and risk factors for many chronic diseases in Hispanics across the United States. And there's a particular emphasis on some of the Hispanic subgroups that have not made it into some of our national health surveys, like Cuban Americans, Puerto Ricans, and Central and South Americans. This is a multi-site observational study. It's now being converted into a longitudinal study. We have baseline medical history and examination data on all these participants. It was targeting Hispanics aged 18 to 74. And we have the centers in Miami, the Bronx, Chicago, and San Diego that have recruited each 4,000 Hispanics into their samples. So we're going to focus on the Miami Field Center, and our target population is roughly an equal roughly equal proportions of Cuban Americans and Central and South Americans. There was a lot of things that were assessed in this study. It was sort of like an NHANES for Hispanics, although there are some organ systems that were neglected. We have a clinic visit that we saw about 6 to 8 participants a day. They came in fasting for oral glucose challenge for cholesterol assessment, etc. A variety of things were covered. The one organ system that was not was vision. The ocular system was really not covered in this survey at all. There's a wealth of information in terms of the blood tests that were performed on these participants. So our aims are to document healthcare and ocular healthcare utilization and barriers, to estimate the knowledge of recommended ocular healthcare visit intervals and risk factors for the development of visual disorders, to determine the prevalence, or at least the self-reported prevalence, of these conditions and these risk factors, including modifiable risk factors such as smoking and protective behaviors, such as the use of sunglasses and protective eyewear. Finally, to look at correlates of ocular risk factors and conditions. So it'll be 40, we're only enrolling our Miami participants 40 years of age and older, and it's going to be a 30-minute telephone interview. And we're going to do this either by phone, or if they're coming back for some of the other ancillary studies, we'll offer them enrollment in this study as well. So we're going to be looking at a variety of things, and we basically drew from existing surveys, including National Health Interview Survey and the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, as well as some minority-focused surveys like the Los Angeles Latino Eye Study. Basically, we're going to be reporting, focusing on our aims, and the other strength here is that we're going to be able to merge our data with our existing clinic data, so we'll be able to look at things like whether or not a person is diagnosed as diabetic, whether or not they were aware of it when they came in for their initial visit, and how those factors may play out in terms of their knowledge about risk factors, their access to ocular utilization, et cetera. So. And I'll stop right there. Thank you.